Right here at the top of the show, we are joined in studio by a young man who has made his career in an area that we know too little about as a Black community overall, which is the world of classical music. And I believe Troy is helping to pull up a clip where we can give you just a little taste of his vocal expertise. And Troy, you let me know when we have that available. But for those of you who do not keep up with classical music here in the city, the Opera Company of Philadelphia is putting on a new show called Charlie Parker's Yardbird. And our guest, Lawrence Brownlee, will be starring in the lead role. Before we speak to him about this process, this career, and this show, we're going to give you a little taste of his vocal expertise.
Je vais marcher sous mon
Not many people in the world who can say that they have shared the stage with the late, great Luciano Pavarotti, nor can they say that they have garnered a 2015 Grammy or International Opera Award nomination. And we are joined here in studio by a young man who can claim all of those credits, who is appearing in this wonderful performance, Yardbird, here in the Philadelphia area. Lawrence Brownlee, good morning.
Good morning.
It is wonderful. First of all, you got the right one. Just so you know, here at the station, you got the right one. My father was a boy soprano.
Okay.
And I come from a long line of performers dating back to even before vaudeville, but very specifically from then forward.
Okay.
So for the last four generations of my family, not only have we been on stage in one capacity or another, but the love for classical music has also been handed down through the genes. And my father, I always joke with him, I was like, if he could drink anyone's bathwater, it would have been Jesse Norman's, along with Kathleen Battle, who I had the pleasure of speaking to late last year, or earlier this year, actually, when she appeared at the Kimmel Center to sing a program for Black History Month about our spirituals.
Yes.
And the connectedness to that history. So I am excited to have you here in studio, and excited that this production in particular is marrying classical music and jazz, which we call African-American classical music. So what made you decide to be an operatic tenor?
Wow. You know, people always say that sometimes your career chooses you. I started singing in church back in the day. I came from a church called the Church of God in Christ, and we sang. I was in church 5 days a week.
I was going to say, music ministry is big for Kojic folks. I do
5 days
that.
A week. I mean, we're talking about Friday night Terry service and YPWW. No, in church quite a bit, but singing from a very, very musical family. My father was the choir director. My mother sang solos, one of six kids.
Mm-hmm.
So they forced us to sing. I didn't like singing. But at that time, I was more of an instrumentalist. I played many instruments. As we say in the Kojic Church, you just get in where you fit in.
Yes.
There's a need, there's a lack, you go and play. And so I learned to play several instruments. But I remember as a young kid that I would be singing sometimes, again, not liking to sing, but my father forcing me to. And then people would start to point me out for my voice.
Mm.
So I became a little bit more confident about singing. I got into junior high school and high school, and then people would say to me, you know, hey, you have something special in your voice. Well, as a result of being in several programs, several choirs, there was a music program at the university. I'm from Youngstown, Ohio.
Ah.
And so Youngstown State University had a program for gifted music students. Well, at the end of that program, we had to give a recital. So at that recital, I sang in a classical way, not really knowing what a classical singer sounds like,
mm-hmm.
But singing and afterwards, there was a gentleman who approached my father and I. He said, you have something very special that the world of music needs to hear. So I think you have a career in opera in front of you. At that time, I said, what? Are you crazy? I want to be a lawyer.
Uh-huh.
That's what I thought at that time. But I didn't really know what opera was. And so, of course, I'd heard of some of the great historic voices, African-American voices also of opera, but not really knowing. And so as I got introduced to the world of classical music, I fell in love with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we here in Philadelphia, of course, there's a longstanding tradition
yes.
of having excellent training programs, both for classical and for jazz.
Absolutely.
But yet and still, there's also a history of discrimination,
mm-hmm.
particularly in the realm of classical music.
Yes.
Where, you know, a lot of our talented young people have been told, well, you're good, but you don't necessarily fit.
Mm-hmm.
So as you increased your training, as you began to decide that this really was how you were going to dedicate your life, what kind of experiences have you encountered as a young black man in this, you know, very historically European art form?
Absolutely. Well, what happened to me, I had some people, some mentors, teachers earlier on that said to me, you know, just really know what you have. You have something special,
mm-hmm.
and you have to make that better than everyone else to be equal. So I had a teacher who said, you're going to face discrimination. You have three strikes against you. You're short. I'm not so tall. Just about 5'6".
Mm-hmm.
African-American. And he was like, those are two things. And, you know, at the time I was a little bit heavier. He said, you have three strikes against you before you open your mouth.
Mm.
What you have to do is be better than everyone else and then have something special. So a lot of times my motto is when I get on stage, I want to do something that's special. People will remember it. If you think about some of these great concerts, going to hip-hop, R&B, classical, jazz, you just think about these moments of virtuosity that you hear these people do, and it's something special that remains in the minds of people. So for me, it's always about trying to do something that speaks to the heart. I try to make it very real. I don't try to create something that's not, you know, fabricate something. It is who I am, and it's an expression of my art. I've encountered some racism, some things in my and my quest to become an opera singer, but I always believed in the talent that I had. And so those people earlier on who really encouraged me, they encouraged me to work on my acting and my languages. I speak more or less four languages now,
mm-hmm.
But I wanted to take the things away from them that they could say, well, he's this. Well,
right.
You know, if they would try to knock me down a few pegs, I would try to give myself something on the other side. So I'm definitely a half full type of person.
Yeah.
But you know, I always just believed in myself, and my father is about the same height as me, and he was just a person who always saw the glass half full. So
mm-hmm.
I always believed that I had the opportunity to do it and had the talent.
And honestly, voice supersedes any of the other stuff. I mean, when it comes to what you do, that when people hear you and are as it is, when, you know, when you hit a wonderful aria, there's a level of people in the audience go, woo. And at that point, you could be purple and 8 feet tall. It's
right.
just a matter of what the voice does, how it inspires the spirit, the goosebumps people
Absolutely.
Get when they hear it. So give us a little bit of background on this moment that we heard at the top of the program with Pavarotti.
Okay, now this was a famous aria called A Mezzo-Me from The Daughter of the Regiment. I performed the aria, the opera, actually several times. And so it's one with 9 high Cs. And so now there's been, for the last, I don't know, 10 years or so, since Pavarotti made it famous,
mm-hmm.
Not a lot of people did it before him. And so several people have, I guess, garnered, you know, acclaim from doing it. And so it's one of the things, if you want to win competitions, you win it, because the thing that a tenor can have anytime is the high C.
Right.
Many tenors don't have the high C.
Yeah.
So as they say, if you have it, flaunt it.
Yes.
And so it's one of those things. And this was in Berlin. I sang this. It was called the AIDS Gala several years ago in Berlin. And it's one of the things that people got off YouTube. And it's been very successful for me.
Exactly. Well, hey, you know, going viral is the, you know, is the goal for so many people in so many different ways. If you can do so with dignity these days.
Absolutely.
That's really a plus. And you have certainly done that with that beautiful piece. So now let's get to Philly.
Yes.
And the idea that the Opera Company of Philadelphia is taking on jazz and taking on this life story of an amazing figure from, you know, from the era that Philadelphia really saw a lot of acclaim. Mm-hmm. When we're talking about bebop and all of the artists that have come through this city to help hone their skills and to build bands, because people mm-hmm. took plenty of Philadelphia musicians when they were on the road, and you playing this title role of Charlie Parker.
Yes. Opera Philadelphia has been very supportive of me since the beginning of my career. They've given me the opportunity to perform here on the stage. And so I have very good friendships with the people there. Actually, the music director, his name is Corrado Rivas. He's someone who gave me one of my very, very first important opportunities at La Scala, mm-hmm. the famed theater in Milan, Italy, in 2001. So he is now the music director here. So he and I have a great friendship, and David Devan, all the people at Opera Philadelphia. Well, they know that what I do normally, I sing a composer called Rossini, mm-hmm. which is high, floored, fast, I guess people would say virtuosic. And so when they were talking about doing a program, a project around me, they got with this, of course, Philadelphia has a great jazz tradition.
Yes.
They talked to this guy named Daniel Schneider. He's a Swiss jazz saxophonist, but also a composer. And so they said, we want to pair you with Lawrence to see if you can come up with something. So he thought about what I sing and what he does. So he thought the marriage of classical music and Lawrence Brownlee and jazz could be through the life story of Charlie Parker.
Ah.
Of course, Charlie Parker has had such an amazing, profound effect on all of music.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you listen to the radio today, you hear some of the beats of Wiz Khalifa, or you hear some of the music nice. Of this Pharrell. I mean, whatever you want to hear, any of these guys, they have stuff, motives, or these little segments that you mm-hmm. can say, that comes from something else, that comes from something else.
Yes.
And I think you can go back to people like Dizzy Gillespie, Charlie Parker, Miles Davis, Coltrane. And so I think this great appreciation for jazz and classical to merge together, that's how the idea came together to do this. And so...
So for people who are going to be in the audience who are clearly going to be buying tickets for this show as they hear this interview, are we going to expect that you will be doing arpeggios, something very similar to a jazz scat, but in your own, you know, in your own traditions?
Well, the interesting thing is Daniel wrote out, transcribed a few of the jazz scats.
Really?
I guess the jazz, I guess they would be scales on the saxophone. But I have to try to do a jazz scat, so I'm working on my jazz scat language.
Okay.
I'm a big fan of Ella Fitzgerald, Mel Torme, who are all
Velvet Fog.
Oh my gosh, one of my those are like my two favorites.
Yeah.
I mean, I love Kim Burrell too.
Yeah.
But I love. I really do love Ella Fitzgerald and Mel Torme, because I think they use their voices like instruments. And I've been telling people that, interestingly enough, the way that he's composed this, when you think about an instrumentalist, what they normally do is play the whole range of an instrument.
Right.
And so for what I've been doing, normally a singer sings about two octaves, just a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Not four octaves like an instrument
right.
can play. But Daniel has wrote this in a way that it is really trying to use all the extremes, very, very high and very, very low of my voice,
mm-hmm.
fast, legato. And so it's been very interesting to do that and develop and to be able to learn a lot about jazz in the process, too.
I love it. Well, since you brought up some of the artists that we love, know and love here on the station, who's on your iPod?
Oh, my gosh. If you listen to I have Ricky Dillard.
Okay.
Of course, I said Kim Burrell, Fred uh-huh. Hammond. I have Miles Davis.
Uh-huh.
You know, back in college, you were cool if you had Miles Davis on there. everything. Probably I have NDRE on there.
Uh-huh.
Prince, Michael Jackson, Sting,
uh-huh.
The Police. I have.
We're going to be friends. We're going to be friends, Lawrence.
But everything, mint condition. I mean, I cannot leave them out.
Right.
I mean, goodness, they're
So one of the things why I'm smiling so wide at hearing this is that we preach, particularly on this show, but on the station in general, we preach multi-generational appreciation. We're trying to get grandparents to know what the grandkids are listening to on the iPod and to develop the cross-cultural conversation that somehow we lost when we stopped sitting around the family stereo and listening to music together.
Absolutely.
And so hearing you, knowing where you have found your fame and your career, but also understanding that you have an appreciation for this wide range of music, I'm hoping parents and grandparents in the listening audience and young people, you should be in school, but if you happen to be listening to the show, that you're understanding just because you're good in one area does not preclude you, or if you have a favorite genre, that doesn't preclude you from appreciating music across the spectrum. And this is Black Music Month. So this show is perfectly indicative of the conversations and the kind of compositions and productions we hope that more people will jump into with both feet in the future. There's no reason why classical and jazz can't live on the same space, in the, on the same stage, and certainly in the body of someone as accomplished as you.
Absolutely. And the thing is, it's interesting you say this, because I've done all those different styles. I started in gospel, I did classical music, musical theater, jazz, a little bit of pop, inspirational music. Of course, I'm a big fan of Latin salsa and used to be a DJ of salsa music. I mean, I'm just, you know, all this stuff. Yes.
So you got to tell me where the after party is.
Okay.
You know, we need to hang. We need to have a good time.
But this is the thing. It's all these things I've done. And so it doesn't take away, like you said, one thing informs another, actually. And so that's why I have a great appreciation of all styles. And it doesn't, as you said, preclude you from loving and being actually to be good in another style as well.
Absolutely. So we know we're going to invite people to come out and check out Yardbird, but what's next for you?
I also have a concert at Union Baptist, of course, the great home of the Marian Anderson, one of the great contralto African-American singers of, you know, of all time. From Philadelphia as well, too. So I'll be doing a recital on June the 8th with a gentleman by the name of Damien Sneed, and we'll be doing some very, very spruced up, I should call it, Negro spirituals that have some nice samba or jazz rhythms and stuff like that. But we'll have an evening of that on June 8th. And then I will go to Switzerland in about 2 weeks before I go to Denmark. And then I'll be in Chicago in the fall. So always on the road, going. But I enjoyed a great deal.
Well, we have thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. We wish you nothing but success. And
thank you both.
For everyone in the listening audience, as we celebrate Black Music Month, what better way to do it here in Philadelphia than by going to check out Opera Philadelphia's new production, Charlie Parker's Yardbird, with the lead role being written specifically for today's guest, operatic bel canto tenor Lawrence Brownlee. The first two shows are already sold out. So if you intend to see this, you need to pick up your tickets right away. The other performances are June 10th, 12th, and a matinee on the 14th at the Perelman Theater at the Kimmel Center. For more details on tickets for Yardbird, go to OperaPhila, that's P-H-I-L-A, operaphila.org/Yardbird, or you can call their box office at 215-893-1018. That number again is 215-893-1018. Lawrence Brownlee, it has been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Much continued success
to you,
sir.
Thank you for having me. Thank you. Yes.
And I intend to be at the press screening or preview this evening.
Okay.
So I will get a chance to check it out, and we will be able to dialogue much more about
all
that you got going on stage. With that, ladies and gentlemen,